this one, the chanting of the Lord's holy names, to make them more and more successful. It's very difficult to study the Srimad Bhagavatam if you don't chant Hare Krishna. I've rarely seen a person who studies the Srimad Bhagavatam who is not chanting Hare Krishna and does it well. Because the chanting makes the consciousness in an appropriate mood in which to actually pick up on the essential truths of the Bhagavatam. And likewise, somebody who is doing a very deeply devotional worship of the deities will also be accompanied with the holy name. And as we were hearing with the Dham, the mixture of the Nam and the Dham, backwards and forwards, they have to be together. In order to serve the Dham properly, you have to be able to chant Krishna's names. And association of devotees is most attractive and most heartwarming and most satisfying to all concerned, especially when there is a lot of kirtan. Now, I gave you three quotes. The first one, I have written it, put it in as the first one, you can place them as you wish, is 2.1.11, text 11 in the first chapter of the second canto. This is just a verse. Not just a verse, I beg your pardon, but this is without, there is no purport. So this verse, I will read the English. O King, constant chanting of the holy name of the Lord after the ways of the great authorities. If you have your pens, please investigate. Go a little deeper into these verses. After the ways of the great authorities is the doubtless and fearless way of success for all, including those who are free from all material desires, those who are desirous of all material enjoyment, and also those who are self-satisfied by dint of transcendental knowledge. Three classes of people. And what does he say? What are the qualities? If you follow the way of the great authorities, what were the two words used? Doubtless and fearless. So we may still have fears and we may still have doubts, but we're asked to accept the glorification of the holy name as it is given by the authorities, because doing that will allow us to constantly chant the holy name after the ways of the great authorities. That means we have to accept their glorification of the holy name. If we cannot accept this and we say, I haven't experienced that, so I don't know if this is actually possible, then this is, by definition, not following the mood of these great personalities who assure us. And this is called, as we know, the difference between Nam, chanting without offense, and chanting with offense. Chanting with offense means that we're still in a position where we have doubt about these things. So we can understand that we're still in this stage, but we must hear these very firm affirmations given by the transcendentalists who are way, 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 way ahead of us. So the next one that I've put in, you can again have them in your own order, was the one, text 15, chapter 4:25. Now, this one I am not going to read the whole purport, and I would like you to underline or work on this one. Here is the verse. Let me offer my respectful obeisances unto the all auspicious Lord Sri Krishna, about whom glorification, first one, glorification, remembrance, second one, audience, Prabhupada is translating, audience, ikshanam, prayers, hearing and worship can at once, I underlined at once. In fact, I underlined all of those different forms of approach, and I circled at once, cleanse the effect of all the sins of the performer. Now, from the purport, I went to this section, where Srila Prabhupada, at the bottom of this page, he says, Kirtanam, or glorifying the Lord, can be performed in very many ways. Well, this is interesting. Kirtan. We think kirtan, we're going to have kirtan now. Nam Sankirtan. We're going to have kirtan of the holy name. But here are the various ways. These ones that we have just read in the translation, they are all considered part of kirtan. Such as, on the next page, remembering, visiting temples to see the deity, offering prayers in front of the Lord, and hearing recitations of glorification of the Lord as they are mentioned in Srimad Bhagavatam or in Bhagavad Gita. Kirtanam can be performed both by singing the glories of the Lord in accompaniment with melodious music and by recitation of scriptures like Srimad Bhagavatam or Bhagavad Gita. So we have, in this definition, we have been performing kirtanam throughout all of our studying of the bhakti angas. Now this one, the last one, is an interesting one, and I'll warn you, I mean, of course, some people will not feel like this at all, but I will warn you that this is a verse that used to always make me feel defeated. As soon as I would read this verse, I would feel as if I'd just been flattened. Here's the verse. Certainly that heart is steel framed, gulp, which, in spite of one's chanting the holy name of the Lord with concentration, does not change. When ecstasy takes place, tears fill the eyes and the hairs stand on end. But just now I was thinking to myself, should I read this verse to everybody? Should I open up the possibility of their feeling defeated? Of course they may not, but they may. So I looked at it a little carefully to see if I could find anything that gave me hope. And I went on to the purport. So the first thing that struck me was, in the verse itself, if you look at this very carefully, it says, the heart is steel framed. Like steel means hard as anything. If in spite of chanting the holy name of the Lord with concentration, it doesn't change when there is ecstasy takes place, tears fill the eyes and so on and so forth. So suddenly I looked at it again and I thought, oh, well, even with concentration, I don't feel ecstasy and tears fill my eyes and hairs definitely don't stand on end. So therefore, in a sense, I don't even come into this category yet. Rather than feeling deflated and defeated, I should read it again. So I thought, yes, I'm trying, we will try together, all of us, to chant with concentration. And if we perceive that our heart doesn't miraculously completely change, it doesn't mean necessarily that it's steel framed because we are indifferent to ecstatic symptoms. It means that, this isn't much better, but it's different. It means that because we are still in the stage we are committing offences, quite naturally we are committing offences, that means our thinking is not yet purified, fully purified. So therefore we are not yet approached even this point where these tears will become visible in our eyes and our hair will stand on end. We are not there yet. So therefore, I shouldn't feel like as if, oh no, I've reached so high and now I've been defeated by this statement. I should feel rather that this is something that I have to work towards. So then I read some of the purport, and Srila Prabhupada starts the purport by saying, the whole process of spiritual culture is aimed, the whole process of spiritual culture is aimed at changing the heart of the living being in the matter of his eternal relation with the Supreme Lord as subordinate servant which is his constitutional eternal position. So we may not find that very attractive, the position of servant, so much so that Prabhupada says in another purport that for an ordinary person, the thought of being a servant, they immediately think of what it's like to be a servant in this world, and they find it repulsive. And so they find this position repulsive. And so when they read it, they think, that's not attractive. So I don't think my heart will change. It won't draw me forward to think that I have to be a subordinate servant. But if, even in this world, if you were to go, for example, I had an experience once. I was visiting Bombay. And I went to the house of a multi-millionaire family. Very, very, very wealthy man. And he was also a devotee. And when I came into his house, I knocked on the door, and this lady opened the door, elderly lady, looked very genteel. And she came and opened the door, nicely dressed and so forth, and she invited me in, and I sat down, and she came and bought me something to drink and so on and so forth. And it took me a while before I realized that she was a servant, because she looked so nice. She looked like part of the family. She didn't look like scruffy and like she wasn't being whipped from behind. She was like a member of the family. So I was talking to them later, and they were saying, oh, this is our maid. She has been with us for the last 30 years, 35 years. Her daughter is about to get married. She'll be going to her village. We'll provide everything for the marriage. She'll be away for a while. Then she'll come back. She takes care of the children. She sleeps with the children. We provide her all her clothes. We provide, she eats what we eat. And as I was hearing about her life, it sounded pretty nice. So this was just an ordinary materialistic man, and he was a devotee, actually. And so he also wanted that all of his servants would be devotees. And he would, another, a friend of his that struck me also very deeply, in fact, a relative of his driver became a devotee, and in the car and in all dealings to do with business, his driver would be his driver, like a servant. But when they had kirtan, they would dance together and hold hands and dance up and down with all of the devotees. And this master, he's the master, he's a very serious devotee. He sleeps on the floor. He doesn't even sleep in a bed. His children don't even sleep in beds. They sleep on the floor. The driver probably sleeps in a bed. But he is such an exalted master, and he is so caring to his servant that his servant is in a very fortunate position. And this is just not a materialist. This is a worldly example of service. Imagine what it would be like to become a subordinate servant of Krishna, who loves his devotees dearly and is always doing so many things to make them happy. Imagine how nice that would be. Imagine how little you would have to struggle if you were a servant of such a great and wonderful master. Yet because we have turned ourselves from a very long time with our back to him, we feel like he's our competitor. He's going to take something from us. Something we have, he might take. And he's saying, no, everything is mine. Oh, that's even worse. But actually, this is the reality. Everything is his. We are his. When our faith reaches that point that we can understand this fact, all our misgivings, all our problems, all our doubts, all our fears, all our anxieties will go away. And then we will understand how the Bhagavatam is saying it is a doubtless and fearless process. So we're not there yet. So we can expect that there'll be some turbulence in our case, but we have to continue with our endeavors so that we can come closer and closer to that point. Now, something that struck me further in this particular purport. In the middle of the purport, it says, it is expected by all means that by discharging regulated devotional service, one must manifest the change of heart. It is expected that one's heart will change. If there is no such change of heart, the heart must be considered steel-framed, for it is not melted even when there is chanting of the holy name of the Lord. So Srila Prabhupada is taking these words more towards us, not somebody who is experiencing symptoms of ecstasy. We must always remember that hearing and chanting are the basic principles of discharging devotional duties, and if they are properly performed, there will follow the reactional ecstasy with signs of tears in the eyes and standing of hairs on the body. Yes, but when, he says. These are natural consequences and are the preliminary symptoms of the bhava stage. So anyone who has seen the different levels of advancement in devotional growth knows that the bhava stage is very high. It's well above, well and truly above where we are now. So again, we shouldn't feel defeated by this. That, that's hopeless, I'll never get there. No, because Krishna himself is saying you can get there and you will get there. Then in this last paragraph, and this is all that we will read before we begin chanting, if the reaction does not take place, even after continuous hearing and chanting of the holy name of the Lord, it may be considered to be due to offences only. I quite like the word only. In other words, it's due to offences rather than we're disqualified. And as these offences subside, then this will take place. That is the opinion of the Sandarbha, Srila Jiva Goswami. In the beginning of chanting of the holy name of the Lord, if the devotee has not been very careful about evading the 10 kinds of offences at the feet of the holy name, certainly the reaction of feelings of separation will not be visible by tears in the eyes and standing of hairs on the head. Now what I underlined here as very striking was that Srila Prabhupada has given us a hint here that these tears in the eyes are due to feelings of separation. That a person who is chanting Hare Krishna and chanting Hare Krishna with feeling, trying to chant, trying to glorify Krishna. Now I was sitting here before and Jayashree came in and Ujeshwari was sitting here and Jayashree was carrying a baby. And she sat down a few seats away from Ujeshwari, and the baby looked over at Ujeshwari, and it started to cry, and it started to cry, and it wasn't going to stop crying. And Jayashree very politely handed the baby back. So this is how we're supposed to chant, just like that, that we're supposed to be crying to Krishna. So Prabhupada said, like a baby crying for the mother. You watch sometime, and you'll see that when a baby starts crying for the mother, unless the mother is far away, the mother very, very, even far away, will quickly come. When the baby's crying is serious. So we have to become gradually, gradually, by being careful of these 10 offences, we have to become a little serious in our chanting, and Krishna will reciprocate very warmly. And what will we feel when Krishna starts to reciprocate with us? Will we feel full of happiness and joy? Do you think we'll feel full of happiness and joy when Krishna starts to reciprocate with us? What do you think we'll feel? We'll feel separation. We want more. We won't want to say, okay, thank you, that's enough. Now we do that because our chanting is not mature. But when we chant and we taste the relating with Krishna, we want more. And because we want more, Krishna will move a little bit back. Because he wants us to walk a little forwards towards him. Have you ever seen a mother with a little child who's learning to walk and the baby stands up and they're going like this, you know, and they're balancing just on their legs, hardly, and they look really helpless. And the mother comes a little close and says, come on, come on, puts her hands out like this, and the baby kind of, with all, feeling totally vulnerable, reaches out for the mother's hand. And she keeps moving them away a little bit. Come on, come on, come on. And the baby is like, you can look on the child's face like terrified, but like is sort of stumbling along towards these hands that keep moving away. But why is the mother doing that? Is she doing this so that everyone can have a laugh at the child's expense or torture the child? Or is she doing that to encourage the child to get up and start to walk? Because the child has the potentiality to walk within them. And if that wasn't true, then how is it there are so many adults getting up and walking in and out of this room and not even thinking for a moment that, oh, I'm walking right now. And what to speak of young children here and also teenagers as well, and we're all walking. There's only one member of our group who's not walking. And so we will have to see that in the future that one member will also be able to walk also. So if we see ourselves like that, like a baby, and if we can chant like a baby, and if we can give up our little, you know, sort of aggressive false ego that says, I'm fine, there's nothing wrong with me, and we can see ourselves spiritually like a baby. Materially we may be very great, but spiritually like a baby, and we can chant in a way that attracts Krishna. And then, if we happen to feel defeated at our endeavors and frustrated by the fact that it's so hard, and vulnerable at the fact that we're being asked to do so much and it's a bit hard, it's a bit too much and so forth, as often happens, then we can actually use those feelings to turn them in our favor by turning them into that mood of separation. That I feel so vulnerable, I feel so far away, please help me. And we may find we have a steel-framed heart and we don't say, please help me. We just say, I feel, and we don't say, help me. But we should practice doing that in chanting Hare Krishna. And gradually it becomes very natural to do that because Krishna will reciprocate. He's just waiting to reciprocate. He's already reciprocating, but unfortunately because he's at our back, and we're trying to avoid him, we're not able to perceive his presence and his reciprocation in every minute and every aspect of our lives. So let's now start to chant and keep these. And this for chanting, we will not write anything because we want, if we have some time, but I don't think we will tonight. We can, if anyone wants to write anything in their book, it would be wonderful. Because it's very, as I said, the very most important of all the processes is chanting. But rather I would like that we would get very much, give ourselves a chance to actually hear and chant together.